in April of this year, a very important event took place. The unity government was established between Hamas and the Palestinian Authority. Israel has been trying to block that for years. Israel was utterly infuriated. There's good reason for that, which I'll come back to. It was a pretty remarkable agreement. Those of you who followed it should be aware of this. Hamas gave up everything. The unity government had no Hamas members. The Palestinian Authority, Fatah that means, was permitted to send thousands of troops into Gaza for security and also to control all the borders and crossings. No reciprocal rights for Hamas in the West Bank. And furthermore, and governance of Gaza was shifting into the hands of Fatah, the Hamas's enemy. And furthermore, the unity government accepted all of the official demands of the so-called quartet, United States, Britain, United Nations, United States, European Union, United Nations, and Russia. Commitment to nonviolence, acceptance of past agreements, and recognition of Israel. They accepted all of it, not a word of protest from Hamas. Hamas itself doesn't accept it, but they were willing to be part of that government. Israel was very angry at that, and it got even more infuriated when not only Europe, but even the United States indicated approval for it. That was really dangerous. At that point, Israel launched a major rampage in the West Bank and Gaza, had a pretext as always. The pretext was the murder of three teenage boys from one of the settler communities, brutal murder. The Israeli government claimed that they didn't know whether they'd been killed or not, so they had a long search, which is a rampage. It turns out they knew right away that they were dead. They claimed right away that this was a Hamas operation. Israel's own specialists, like Shlomi Eldar, one of their main specialists, said that this is highly unlikely, and he almost immediately wrote that in an Israeli journal that the perpetrators were almost certainly from a clan in Hebron that has been a thorn in the side of Hamas for years, the Kawasme clan itself harshly repressed, but carrying out operations that Hamas didn't like and didn't authorize. And by now that's been pretty much conceded. In fact, in today's New York Times, there's an article which you can read which obliquely discusses the documents that Israeli intelligence has released and points out, you know, that's pretty much what they say. There's no indication that the Hamas leadership had anything to do with it or even knew about it, which was pretty evident from the start. But it did give an opportunity for a major assault. Hundreds of people were arrested, many imprisoned, tortured, many killed. A huge amount of property was stolen and so on, mostly targeting Hamas. And there were also attacks in Gaza. On July 7th, half a dozen or so Hamas activists were killed by Israel in Gaza, and the next day there was finally a Hamas reaction, first time in 18 months. And then came Operation Protective Edge, the latest episode which we've just seen and you know about, which is the fiercest of all. That's been the pattern right through since the first of these operations, immediately after the disengagement, which was undertaken for the reasons I mentioned. Will it continue? Well, that depends on... To think through that question, we have to ask about the reasons and the circumstances. Now, the reasons are pretty straightforward. There's a very simple rationale for Israel's consistent policy, supported by the United States, to separate Gaza from the West Bank. In fact, that policy has been underway since the early 1990s. In 1993, Israel and the Palestinian Authority, as you know, signed the Oslo Accords with President Clinton standing on the White House lawn, all seen the picture. A day of awe, it was called in the Boston Globe. Anyone who read the terms of that accord knew that this is going to be a disaster. Well, it's a take a look sometime at the Declaration of Principles that was signed. I must say, I wrote about it right away, talked about it right away. It was perfectly obvious. The Declaration of Principles that was signed says that the ultimate goal of the negotiations, the final goal, will be observance of United Nations Resolution 242. Now, anyone who knows the diplomacy of the period knows that that resolution does not mention Palestinian rights. It says, you know, there's some phrase about nice treatment of the refugees, but that's it, no Palestinian rights. But that was to be the ultimate goal, total disaster for the Palestinians. Interesting questions why Arafat and the developing Palestinian Authority accepted this, could go into it, but they did. It basically undermined internal Palestinians who refused to accept it. There had been a Palestinian negotiating team led by Haider al-Shafi, probably the most respected Palestinian in the territories, a dedicated nationalist. And he refused to sign any of the agreements that Bush and Baker and Rabin and others were pressing unless they ended settlement expansion. Arafat was willing to give that up, and he was willing to give up all Palestinian goals, as the declaration made clear. So that was the day of awe. Haider al-Shafi refused even to attend the ceremony on the White House lawn, quite properly. But many of you will remember the hype about that. The agreement, the Oslo Accords, did state that the West Bank and Gaza are an indivisible territorial entity which cannot be separated. From that point on, the United States and Israel have been dedicated to separating them, making sure that there's no contact between them in violation of the solemn agreement that they had signed with great fanfare. And there's a reason for that. It's clear if you look at a map. The West Bank, whatever enclaves Israel might leave to Palestine within the West Bank, are themselves completely imprisoned. Israel's on one side, Jordan's on the other side, both allies of the United States, which is, you know, Israel's sponsor, basically. So they're imprisoned. Their only outlet to the world is through Gaza, seaport, airport, and so on. So separating Gaza from the West Bank is quite significant from the point of view of the goal of ensuring exactly what Dov Weisglass stated in the comments that I mentioned, which you can find documented over and over again in the Israeli literature. For example, the electoral program of the governing coalition in Israel, the Likud coalition, its electoral program states that there can never be a Palestinian state west of the Jordan, period. There's a lot of talk about the Hamas charter, which nobody takes seriously, but you won't find much about the electoral program of the governing coalition. That's been the commitment, no meaningful Palestinian state. So if we break Gaza from the West Bank, that means that whatever's left of the Palestinians in the West Bank will be imprisoned. And in fact, it's more extreme than that, because as part of Israel's settlement program that's been going on since the late 60s, they're systematically taking over the Jordan Valley, expelling Palestinians. This is about a third of the West Bank, a lot of some of the most valuable arable land. It's done by the usual method, establishing military zones where Palestinians aren't allowed to settle. Then an Israeli military settlement moves in. Pretty soon it's a civilian settlement, sinking wells and expelling the population, standard measures, happens slowly, so it doesn't receive much attention. Occasionally you'll get a report by the Israeli human rights group, B'Tselem, or by Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, occasionally a newspaper report, but it's pretty much under the radar. And as that continues, the imprisonment of anything left to the Palestinians only increases. Hence the separation from Gaza has been quite a high priority, and it's been going on for 20 years in violation of the accords that were signed.